ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. In our last class, we did discuss certain important values which we should cultivate if we wish to progress in any field of life. One of them is prayer. Prayer to the God so that we can appreciate the value of life. The first thing any person who wishes success in life in any field should recognize is the value of life. You may think, after all, we all know what life is about. No, we do not know. How come we do not know? Because if we really appreciate the value of something, then our entire life will change. Our behavior itself will take a totally different turn. There was a great saint, William Law. He had written a very beautiful book, A Serious Call to Devout Life. And very succinctly, he summarizes, of course it's about Christians. So many people who claim that they are Christians. How do we know? Because if you go Sunday morning, you'll get the whole church is full of these so-called Christians. Excepting those 1.5 hours in the church. If you examine their life at other times, and so 6 days and 22.5 hours, you will see that there is absolutely no difference between them and somebody who claims to be a non-believer. One of the things he mentions is the way we utilize our time, our possessions, our body and our mind indicates clearly where our intent is. That's an important point. I was astonished when I read that first time. This is what Sri Ramakrishna is terming as yearning, intense yearning for God. This is what William Law is telling. If we really value our life, what is it that we really value? Paradoxically, if you ask anybody, do you value your life? Are you prepared to give up your life? He says, no. How can I give up my life? Very few of us will give that reply. But all the time, we are killing ourselves, wasting our life, our time, in everything excepting valuing our life. This is the paradox. So what is it that is first thing that happens? We are human beings. We could have been one of the species of the billions and billions and billions, mosquitoes, or ants, or cockroaches. The great Shankara, who says this world is a maya, is an illusion, he also says a human birth, a desire for spiritual life, and the company of the holy, durlabham. There was a very interesting incident. Swami Niranjanananda, for the first time, when he was a young man, he came to Sri Ramakrishna. First time, they had some conversation. Then the young man went away. Second time when he came, Sri Ramakrishna was standing outside. He saw this Niranjan coming from a long distance. He ran, embraced him, started shedding tears and said, "My boy, time is passing away. When are you going to realize God?" The description given is very beautiful. Swami Niranjanananda, at that time young boy, he said, "I was thinking, I am not worried about my realizing God. Why is this man having so much headache about my realizing God?" Why? Because Sri Ramakrishna realized that the every day that is passing is a valuable day. Not only from the
ultimate point of view, but from practical point of view. Because the greatest delusion is that we are going to live quite some time. And it, unfortunately, you know, it goes on postponing. This is how we treat life. We don't know. The next minute may be our last period on this earth. Of course, according to Vedanta, you don't need to worry. You'll be given another chance. But that's not the point. The point is, in next birth also, we would be exactly like this only. So three things we have to value. What are those three things? Life, what type of desire we have. Do we have worldly desire or spiritual desire? And lastly, we have to worry about the wonderful opportunity given to us. Just imagine, all of us sitting here today, how fortunate we are to sit here and listen to good things. How many times you had this opportunity in the past to sit and listen to good things? Of course, because you are devotees, you come here every time, every Sunday at least, or occasionally on Sundays, you will have this good time. But you go outside, see how much satsanga you have. People only talk. So this is the first thing we have to value. Value in life is that be thankful to God. I am a human being. I have a desire for spiritual life. And I have this marvelous opportunity given to me. Let me not throw it away frivolously. How can we value life? That's where the most important point is. Self-awareness. If you go to a Buddhist, especially, there are certain sects like Zen Buddhism. The only thing they tell you is, awareness, awareness, awareness. Be aware. What are you doing? I am sitting. Are you aware you are sitting? Wonderful stories are there. There was a Zen master and he had a disciple for 40 years. He must have been 60, 65 by that time. So he felt, 40 years I am only a disciple. Why can't I become a master in my own right? So he went to his guru, said, Master, don't you think it is time for me to be a guru in my own right? Hey, guru said, wonderful news. Then he said, oh, it's very good. You can be. By the way, where did you leave your shoes? The man said, I don't remember. That was the answer. Enough. Do you follow? The man, 5 minutes before entering the guru's room, he left his shoes outside the room. And whether he left it on the right side, left side, he could not remember. A fellow who could not remember this, how is he going to be a guru? Zen Buddhism, Vipassana. I'm sure some of you have heard about Vipassana. It's a beautiful Sanskrit word. Buddha's whole teaching centers on that point. Insightful meditation. You may think, what is that insightful meditation? What do they do? It is Buddha, he never advocated the idea of God. He never advocated the idea of Brahman or meditating on anything. Simply said, you sit and observe your breath, observe your body movement, observe your thoughts which are coming and going. Don't control, don't interfere, don't do anything. Just sit. This is one of the best paths that have been advocated by Vedanta. Only they didn't give the word upasana. What did they call it? Be a sakshi. Sakshi means be a witness. Simply witness in this life. Let us just meditate a bit on Sri Ramakrishna's life, Holy Mother's life, first Holy Mother's life. You know, at night she used to say at some point of time, that I used to go out and look at the moon and pray to God. Oh Lord, even the moon has stains in it. Let me never have any stains in me. Now, how do we know that we do not have any stains? You see, the stubborn, unconscious mind, even with all good intentions, if we don't keep the self-awareness, it can drown us forcibly. As many times I mentioned in my talk, Stotapuri, in Man of Brahmagnana, what happened? 1 minute, 1 second, he had forgotten, the whole Brahmagnana has disappeared. He went to beat somebody else. What is the point? Is getting angry is not the point. Point is, he was not aware that he became angry. If somebody consciously, with full awareness, becomes angry or annoyed or Our love also like that. Not only our anger, our japa, our meditation, our study of books, our listening to music, our conversation. As though multitasking is going on. We are also listening, we are also planning, we are also regretting, we are also doing so many things at the same time. It's called multitasking. Multitasking is not a help in any field of life. You want to listen to music, listen to it. It would not be surprising if I ask many of our devotees who attend our evening vesper service here, what is the meaning of Khandana Bhava Bandhana that we sing? Yes, you know one or two words or 10 words or 15 words. Do you know the whole meaning of the whole song, Aratrikam song? Why? You have been singing for so many years. Why did you not take the trouble? some people read stock market from top to bottom. They have no right to say we have no time. Time is there. Intention is not there. Mechanically you sit and sing. Open your mouth and it goes on like a gramophone record. That doesn't contribute to spiritual progress at all. Intense awareness. So, what were we talking about? Holy Mother prayed. Thereafter, how does she know that she was really without any stain? Must be constantly, she must keep a watch, not to let even one single word slip, a wrong word slip from her lips. Sri Ramakrishna now, there is a wonderful book, Great Master. It is a study in psychology, depth psychology. Devotees perhaps recall, there was an incident. One day Sri Ramakrishna was sitting, suddenly he said, another young monk, Paramahamsa, resembling me, came out of my body. He had a trident and he threatened me. If your mind strays here and there and doesn't think only of the Divine Mother, I will pierce you with this trident. It was not a divine vision. Who was that young monk? He said, exactly resembling me. It was a part of his mind which he kept and said, you watch over me. If I take a wrong step, even without my knowledge, if I take a wrong step, then you remind me, you pull me away from there. He initially had kept the guard and he was sincere about it. He meant, whereas we do not mean, we all want to be saints. We do not mean. So, with this background, look at the incidents. You know, he was so truthful. And one day he went to one of his devotees' place. And then he took something from somebody. When he was coming out, he wanted to go to his room. He could not find the way. He was not blind. He said, did I commit a mistake? Went back to the house. Again he started. Again his footsteps were taking him towards a drain. Again he went back. Then suddenly he realized, oh, I have promised this man that I will take something from him only. But instead I took from one of his servants. That's not truthfulness. So he threw away what he had taken. And then this time there was no trouble at all. Who kept him from straying into the pit? It was his own unconscious mind. One day, he went to Holy Mother's place, Nahabad, to eat his food. And he was fond of eating a few spices after food. Is what's called after mouthwash. And Holy Mother gave him some. And she also tied just a few grains to the corner of his cloth. And he started for his room. From where? From Nahabat to his room. How far is that? Just a few feet. But his feet were taking him to Ganges. He was fully aware that his mind wants to go to his room. His feet were dragging him towards Ganges. He was seen murmuring, Mother, shall I drown? Shall I drown? Then Holy Mother heard him and sent for Hriday, came running and forcibly. Sri Ramakrishna was not aware why my legs are carrying me towards the Ganges. Then he realized, as a monk, he took a vow. He would not store things. So, a monk should not store things. There is a popular saying in India that a wandering monk and a bird do not store things. So that is a vow. And here was a supreme monk. he should be an ideal. He should be depending upon God. If he wants some spice, do you think the Divine Mother would not provide? So Sri Ramakrishna, all the time, he kept a part of his mind observing, watching what he is doing. Even though intentionally he did not pay attention to what he was doing, but that part of the mind which he kept as a watchman, it kept watch all the time. If he is taking a wrong step, immediately it will pull him back, even without his knowledge. That is what is called this awareness. If only we are aware what we are saying through our lips, what our hands and feet are doing, and what our mind is thinking, then it would be a wonderful thing. We don't need to go to any psychiatrist. It is very economical too. But we don't want, because what we say and what we deeply really want, there is always a conflict. This is called Kurukshetra War, Devadanava Yuddha, battle between spiritual tendencies and worldly tendencies. So awareness is the first step towards success in any field of life. That is the secret of success in any field of life. With this background, that awareness should be there. What should we do? What are the values that everyone should develop? So there are four values in South Indian traditional system. We speak of four principles which every spiritual aspirant must keep if he wants to progress in spiritual life. These are called Achara, Nishtha, Shraddha and Dhyana or Yoga. Achara, Nishtha, Shraddha and Yoga. Achara means Sadachara, good conduct. Achara is a system of conduct. When do we get up? Then what do we do? After that, what do we do? A whole day is programmed, as it were, and not the slightest deviation. If we can also program our life and keep it for considerable amount of time, then that achara develops into nishtha. Nishtha means unconsciously we follow that routine. We do not need to think 100 times, what shall I do, what shall I do. That conduct itself becomes our guideline in life. And when it becomes really nishtha, then it develops into shraddha. What is the difference between nishtha and shraddha? Nishtha means having some kind of understanding, not really real understanding, but having faith, this is very good for me, and following certain code of conduct. Shraddha means I have absolute understanding through faith, not through realization, but through faith, that this is absolutely right and true. With these three developed, well developed I would say, then only we can take up the practice of any yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Raja Yoga or Jnana Yoga. And you know, just one instance of this achara. You go to India and early morning, after 4 o'clock, however depraved the society around you may be, the first thing they do, you know what they do? Through microphones, blare God's names. Bhajans, it may be Anup Jalota's bhajan or Lata Mangeshkar's bhajans are going on. Devotional singing is going on. After some time, what happens is a different issue. But early in the morning, everybody is forced to, you can't sleep after hearing that blaring. So that's a good thing. Early morning, any radio station, TV station. So that's a good system, because you are hearing God's name and you get up. And there are so many religious programs are broadcast there. Anyway, the point, that is called achara, a system, a code of conduct, whether we understand or not, through reward and punishment, develop certain good habits. Go and do your sandhya vandana, what is called, repeat Gayatri mantra, and take food to the shrine room, then have prasada. These are wonderful ways of conduct. So just as a baby doesn't understand why he should brush his teeth every day until he grows up and becomes a habit, and then only understanding comes. We also are babies. We don't understand. So get up, do it, all these things. And if we don't do it, you may ask, we are in the 21st century. What is the harm if we don't follow these things? After all, many times people say, why should I go to the shrine and take God's name? I can sit, I can open a newspaper, and though I am reading, internally Ram Nam is going on. So many people told me, they are reading newspaper and internally Ram Nam is going on. So achara. This develops into nishtha. What is nishtha? Nishtha means that system where you cannot be without that habit. Habit possesses you. It takes hold of you. Nishtha. And how much we have to be developed, I don't know what is the real translation in English for this word nishtha. One pointed devotion to one particular aspect of reality. It is not only devotion one pointed, that is from subjective side, but from the objective side, that devotion must be directed only towards one particular object. Sri Ramakrishna used to give examples, two examples. One is that of Hanuman. So once it so happened, Hanuman, as you know, is a devotee of Rama. And Rama is an incarnation of Vishnu. Krishna is also an incarnation of Vishnu. Once Hanuman had witnessed his Rama taking the form of Vishnu. He didn't like it because he wants to see his chosen deity only in that particular form. So he was fidgety. Vishnu, after some time, finished his business and put back his dress called Rama. And he asked Hanuman, you know that this is only just a dress. I am Krishna. I am Vishnu. I am Rama. Why are you fidgeting? Then he gave a very famous reply. Srinadhe Janaki Nadhe Abheda Paramatmani Tathapi Mama Sarvasva Ramaha Kamala Lochanaha. I know Rama, Krishna, all these are your incarnations only, your dresses only. Even then, I only like to see Rama, the lotus-eyed Rama, who is the husband of Sita, Janaki. Sri Ramakrishna used to give that example. This is called Ishtanishtha. Then he used to give the example of Gopis, even better example. Gopis, you know, they loved Krishna so much. So they wanted to see Krishna. Krishna was at that time in Mathura. So they went to see him. They had to bribe, even that Sri Ramakrishna, they had to bribe the gatekeeper. So what does that show? That even in those days, bribing was an accepted custom in India. So they had to bribe him. They went inside and they saw Krishna. What was he doing? He was wearing a crown, sitting on a throne. Immediately, they put this, what is called, veil on their faces and said, whom did we come to see? This is not our Krishna. This is Raja Krishna. Is not Gopi Krishna. We had come to see only our Krishna. Ishtanishtha. Was the man who is sitting on the throne, was he any different man from whom they loved? No. They knew it. They were not foolish people. But they want to see their chosen deity only in that particular form. That is called Nishtha. When a man has achieved this kind of Nishtha, he would achieve everything. In course of time, this deep devotion to one particular ideal of God, it brings Shraddha. Shraddha means the person has not the least doubt that this is the truth. This is absolutely real. The story of Nachiketa in Katha Upanishad clearly teaches us this lesson. He who has achieved Shraddha, he achieves everything. Usually we say, yes, we have faith in God. But that doesn't carry any meaning. Why? Because we don't have that type of faith which is not polluted by doubts. The slightest occasion can bring doubts. Whereas Nachiketa had no doubts whatsoever. His father had doubts, even though he was professing. This is what Sri Ramakrishna says, if any man has Shraddha, then he has already reached the goal. This is what, interestingly, Yamadharmaraja, a teacher of Brahmagnana, self-knowledge, he certifies Nachiketa. Even before he gave the knowledge, he says, you have achieved self-knowledge. How did he did not achieve? He was not even given the knowledge. How did he achieve? He says, because your instrument is perfect. You have already, as if you have reached the goal. This is theory of Vedanta. If the instrument is ready, the goal is already achieved. So, Shraddha. And after that, only when we have our Achara, our Nishtha and our Shraddha are perfected to some extent, then only we are fit to take up any path of yoga. That's where we are going to discuss now a little more details. In the West, the system of yoga has developed. In India, when we are talking about yoga, we do not specify, we just use it in a general understanding. It could be karma yoga, it could be bhakti yoga, it could be jnana yoga, it could be raja yoga, because it is a general term. How we apply it to our own particular discipline, that's a different issue. So, this yoga, before even stepping into the practice of yoga, certain qualities have got to be developed. And these qualities are universal. They are for all times. There is no Christian, Hindu, Buddhist or anybody. There is no past, present and future. These are universal values and they must be practiced if we want to achieve peace, harmony, joy. It's a wonderful system. So he specifies there are 10 such qualities, Yama and Niyama. Briefly, we shall discuss. These are called spiritual values, Yama and Niyama. Yama consists of 5 qualities. So, Niyama also consists of 5 qualities. What is the speciality? Why is it divided into 2, Yama and Niyama? An analogy can be given. If you have an old house with a particular color of the walls, etc., and you want to repaint your house, what should you do? What would you do? Would you just buy a new color you like and then go on daubing? No. First you have to remove the old painting. Otherwise, it would be a patchwork. So what Yamas do, the first 5 disciplines do, is remove all the old personality. After all, we are reshaping our personality. Our what we call personality consists of certain qualities that we have. The person is all right, but the personality consists of certain qualities. The way, what principles we have, how we behave. So, if we want to be spiritual, the worldly personality should be removed. But you can't simply superimpose spiritual personality on worldly personality. You will have to first get rid of the old things. And every system of philosophy, every system of religion insists upon these things. Take for example, Buddhas. So, when Buddha discovered the self, he came back to preach. What did he preach? He said, you will have to do 8 things, 8 disciplines. What are those things? You know, right understanding, right intention, right resolve. How beautifully, you know, first right understanding. Everything depends upon understanding. You can't set a goal unless you have a right knowledge about it, right understanding. Then understanding itself will not do. You will have to set your goal and say, that's good, I want that. And we all want. Which beggar doesn't want to be a millionaire? Every beggar wants to be, if you give a choice, every beggar wants to be not only a millionaire, not only a multi-millionaire, a billionaire, if possible. You know, there was a beggar. He went to beg from a rich man's house. And rich man got very annoyed. You parasites, always fleecing, hard-working people. Like, The beggar said, "Sir, don't get annoyed. After all, there is not that much of difference between you and me. While you are trying for your second million, I am trying for my first million." But no beggar is ever going to be a millionaire. It's very rare. Why? Because the understanding is there. The intention is there, but the resolve is not there. We have to resolve. Sat sankalpa. We have to resolve, I want this particular way of life. Having cleared these three points, then only Buddha says, your speech, the way you earn your livelihood in this world, and your thoughts, they must be pure. We call this Shila. Shila means good character, purity of the mind. Then only he says, good way of concentration. Then only he says, ultimately he uses the word, so wisdom means samadhi. Exactly they correspond to what Patanjali is defining as yama and niyama. Slight variations of the words, that's all. So, we will discuss briefly about these things. The first thing is called in yama ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-injury. When a man becomes steadfast in his abstention from harming others, then all living creatures will cease to feel enmity in his presence. So what is the test that we are not injurious? Most of us, if you are asked, do you injure other people or other creatures? Our categorical answer would be, no, I am a good person. I never do any harm to others. But what Swami Vivekananda says, the test of harmlessness is absence of jealousy. The so-called great men of the world may all seem to become jealous of each other for a small name, for a little fame, and for a few bits of gold. So long as this jealousy exists in a heart, it is far away from the perfection of non-injury. These qualities are also based upon the Vedantic understanding. If we injure something, either by thought or by speech, or by action. And most of us, mind you, do not injure others by actions. But we do injure others definitely by thoughts. And definitely, sometimes, by words. Words just to slip. Cruel words, unintentional words will slip. How much we hurt each other in the form of, just unconsciously uttering words that hurt other people. You will be astonished what an amount of pain. Of course, others cannot charge you. It is not illegal. If you utter a word, you can't take that person to the court. But how much? And mostly, it is the most surprising thing is, friends do it to friends. They don't do it to strangers. Jealousy. Who is free from jealousy? I would not ask you, because none of us are free from jealousy. Even spiritual people, so-called spiritual people, are not free from jealousy. Such a highly advanced soul like Bhairavi Brahmani was not free from jealousy. When she went to Kamarpukur and villagers were approaching Sri Ramakrishna for solving their spiritual problems, she felt jealous. I am his guru. I made him what he is. Why are they not coming to me? Why are they going to Sri Ramakrishna? She felt jealous of Holy Mother. Of all the creatures on earth, the most harmless creature, I would say, is Holy Mother. And she felt jealous of Holy Mother. It's astonishing. That is Mahamaya. But Sri Ramakrishna did not say anything to her, because everything has to come in its own right time. A time will came when she had violent quarrel, and then she sat back, because she was an advanced spiritual person. She sat back and said, why did this thing happen? Then she realized to her horror how much, all unconsciously, her mind was harboring jealousy of her own disciple. Does any parent cherish jealousy, harbor jealousy towards their own children? A guru is supposed to look upon all his disciples, her disciples, as children, spiritual children. If they are progressing spiritually, if they are better known, then the father should be happy, the guru should be happier. After all, how many devotees did Sri Ramakrishna have? They counted in the end, only hardly, even those who visited only once, 33 numbers. How many devotees Swami Vivekananda had? So Sri Ramakrishna should certainly be jealous that what right you have got to have thousands of devotees when I only had 33 number of devotees. But that was nothing. Today's presidents, our Ramakrishna Mission presidents, will have at least a few hundred thousand disciples. Even Vivekananda should be jealous that I only had few disciples. Mm-hmm. What right you have got to have so many? But the secret is, the less spiritual we are, the more disciples we have. Don't tell the secret to anybody. The point is, Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna, our Holy Mother, their hearts would be jumping with joy, dancing with joy. The more their children are recognized, the more they would be dancing with joy, because they are true well-wishers of the whole humanity. So, ahimsa, the test of non-injury, is absence of jealousy. Then the next is satya, means truthfulness. It's so rare. Now, the psychologists are telling not to speak of spiritual progress. Even if we want to have peace of mind, we must be true. Only they don't use the word truthfulness. They say, be true to yourself. If you don't feel like cooking, then don't be forced into cooking. If you are not an artist, don't be an artist. If you get great joy in gathering cow dung, then be true to yourself. Others might criticize you, but you will be happy. You know, they are advocating this philosophy nowadays. Money will not bring you happiness. Whatever you like to do, try to do it. Of course, with the proviso that we should not harm other people. So what you like to do, you do that if you have a choice. And unfortunately, most of us do not have that choice these days. This is the special expression of modern slavery. In olden days, we know who slave is, who is a master is. But nowadays, all of us are slaves to, you know, our bosses, our companies, where they say we have to go. And they put it in such beautiful words. You are free. Come to the office when you like. Go away when you like. Only complete this task within 3 days. Yes, there is no hurry. Do it in 10 minutes. Modern slavery. Be true to yourself. This is very important for us. That's what Hinduism's contribution to other religions. Think of God. You must be free to think of God in your own way, which form you like, which name you like, in which way you want to worship, which particular type of yoga you would like to practice. Do not put restraints. Everybody should take only Allah's name. Sri Ramakrishna refers it, you know. Some Muslims caught hold of a Hindu, and at the point of sword, he said, utter the name of Allah. He was a devotee of Divine Mother. So he was uttering, Allah, Allah, Jagadamba, Jagadamba, we will kill you. Then he said, what can you do? I have been habituated to think of my Divine Mother whole life. Now you are forcing me, your Allah, my Jagadamba is pushing out your Allah. What can I do? So this freedom, be true to yourself. In every way, this very quality has a deep meaning. What food you like, how much time you have to sleep, what type of books you choose to read, and how much time you want to sleep, how much food you will eat. All these things, we have to behave according to be true to our body, be true to our capacity. This goes in the form of true self-expression. Then only you will be peaceful, you will also contribute to other people's. But in this context, what satya means, it is not behaving according to our own nature. That is part of discipline, very small part. But the real meaning is, satya means here, that you try to accord yourself with the truth, reality, awake, be real, don't live in a world of fantasy, of your imaginations. What is wrong with the modern world? After these psychological discoveries had come, everybody started advising, don't repress yourself, just express yourself. But true psychologists are warning again and again, only obey your true impulses at the peril of your ruin. There are certain what is called ways, laws of life, and if you don't follow those laws, what is called dharma. In Hindu, in Vedantic language, it is called dharma. Dharma means how we can accord ourselves in harmony with the universal reality, counterpart of rhythm. There is a divine law. We have to align ourselves with that divine law. If we don't, we will be disharmonious cogs. Only we break down. When a part breaks down, what happens? The mechanic comes and replaces it, throws it out. It is useless. So we have to, that way of behavior, which accords with the reality, not our concept of reality, but true reality, that is called dharma. How do we know what is that reality? The scriptures are there to tell us. That is called satya. This is a wonderful subject. I won't go into details now, but just I will give one hint. Mahabharata, satyam is defined as that which is beneficial universally, that is truth. Not you are speaking something what had happened, but what benefits. So there was a story, as a saint was sitting in a forest and some hunters came to hunt animals. One deer was ran in front of the saint, and the saint saw where it went. Shortly after that, the hunters came, they prostrated themselves, asked, did you see a deer? He said, yes. Which way did it go? He pointed out in the opposite direction. Then they went away that way. This was the story told. What is the moral? The moral is, if he was truthful and a holy man, he should have said, yes, I saw it went this way. But he said the opposite because he wants to save three ways. First, he saved the deer. Then he saved the hunters from what? From the sin of killing the deer. Then he saved himself because if he had told what we consider as a truth, then he would have been party to the sin of killing the deer. See how wonderful it is. What is the definition? Satyam bruyat priyam bruyat. Na bruyat satyam apriyam. Truth must be said, and that which is what is called very sweet. Here sweet, priyam is a beautiful word. What it doesn't mean, what is, what appears to be sweet to my ears, lovely to hear your voice. All the while we think, why the Shanigraha is phoning me at this time? How many times we say, lovely to hear voice, oh so nice to see you. What could be more farther from truth than this? So, what is priyam? That which is beneficial to everybody concerned. That is truth. Only, that is the only point, it should be beneficial. Whether it is truth. If untruth is beneficial, that's very good. That is the truth. If truth is not beneficial, that is untruth. But, there are certain guidelines. And those guidelines come to us from the scriptures. That is called satya. Then, asteya. Asteya means non-stealing. We should not steal. If we ask anybody, do you steal? Of course, when we are young people, young small children, no, none of us could say that we have never stolen anything. Many times we have stolen. But as grown-up people, perhaps some of us would not deliberately wish to do it. But we are all thieves, without exception. We are all thieves, excepting those who have realized God, attained self-knowledge. They alone are not thieves. Every one of us are thieves. Oh, who is a thief? A thief is one who appropriates things that do not belong to him. Isavasya Upanishad is telling us, this whole universe belongs to whom? To God. So what are we saying? This house belongs to whom? House belongs to me. These children belong to whom? Belong to me. Property belongs to you. To whom? To me. The bank balance belongs to whom? To me. See, we are appropriating what is God's all the time. So Isayavasya Upanishad, the very first mantra tells us, this whole universe belongs to whom? To God. Tena tyaktena bhunjitha. So with this knowledge, whatever he allows, permits you to have those things, enjoy those things. Do not covet. Ma grita kasya svit dhanam. It's a wonderful mantra. Do not covet anyone else's property, wealth. Now, the kasya svit means anyone else's. From an ordinary interpretation, it means, you know, I have my own property. Do not covet. Let me not covet other person's property. But Shankara gives a special meaning and says, kasya svit dhanam. Whose wealth is it? Whose wealth? God's. Therefore, live with that knowledge. This is what Sri Ramakrishna, every word of his is Veda Vakya. He says, live in this world as a trustee. Do not ever think this belongs to you. Divine Mother has kept you as a trustee. But how do I live? Yes, the Divine Mother has made provisions even for you. You live, take what is necessary, enjoy it. But do not ever entertain the idea that this belongs to me. This teaching he has given in a most telling manner. The fifth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna. What is that? Live like a maid servant. And he explained, what is a maid servant? She knows, I am only coming here to work. This house doesn't belong to me. These children do not belong to me. None of this belongs to me. But I take care of them all the while to the best of my ability. Live like that. What a wonderful, what is he talking about? This Isayavasya Upanishad. He put it in such a marvelous way. So asteya, that is, do not steal in the sense, never appropriate and say, this is mine. If you feel it is mine, it becomes a mine, minefield. So that is a quality a spiritual person has to develop. Why? Because he is trying to identify himself with God. I belong to God. If I belong to God, who doesn't belong to God? Is there anything in this world which doesn't belong to God? If everything belongs to God, then everything belongs to me. I belong to everybody, just like children in the family, all the children. They all know this is our house. They don't say this is my house. They say it is our house. Even the usage of the word our is a wonderful thing. Then, the fourth quality, brahmacharya means, it's a wonderful word. Brahmacharya means practice of abstinence, continence. But actually the word itself doesn't mean that. Brahmani charati iti brahmachari. Brahmachari is one who lives and moves in God. When our mind is thinking of God, are always practicing the presence of God, what does he crave for? And even if he craves for, he always associates it with God. This house belongs to God. Everything belongs. His greatest delight comes only from God. That is called brahmacharya. But in this world, the greatest obstacle to our what is called spiritual progress is our attachment to the body. Of all the things in this body, there are two organs which are the most obstructive. Even though we have so many organs, there are eyes, there are ears, there is tongue, then there is nose, then there is this skin. But two organs are the most dangerous. You know what are those? The sexual organ and tongue, rasanendriya. Of these two organs, the tongue is the most powerful. Right from the birth, the child is hardly born, he opens his mouth. What is he telling? Give me something to eat. Give honey and his face becomes wrinkles, breaks into wrinkles. Give him something bitter, oh my God, he yodels in such a way. Yeah, the man is dying. And then somebody comes and says, would you like to eat something? Yes. What would you like to eat? So, rasagulla will not be a bad idea. The first thing and the last thing. Even the sexual instinct doesn't work at all times. Only it works under certain conditions. But this, any condition, you are worried, and the more you are worried, the more the attention is paid to this. What is the cause of obesity? So, why? It's called comfort food. Small children, you know, go and hug teddy bear. So, whenever I'm worried, I should go. We all suffer from seafood. There was one husband, he became very fat. So, his wife took him to the doctor. Doctor asked, what is the matter? Said, my husband suffers from seafood. He said, I never heard anybody suffering from seafood. He said, no. What I mean is, whatever food he sees, he eats. That is called seafood disease. So, is brahmacharya means having control over our tongue and over our sexual instinct. It is not bad. It is, but regulated and used it properly, it is fine. So, it is said, fulfill your desires through proper marriage, etc. And if you want to eat, offer it to God and eat. But the idea is finally, we should not be held down, bound down by these instincts. We must be the masters. That is called brahmacharya. And the last is aparigraha. Aparigraha means non-acceptance of gifts. In this world, it is impossible to live without accepting gifts. Children receive gifts. When we get married, we receive gifts. And throughout life, on festive occasions, New Year's, etc., we receive gifts. What does it mean? It means two things. According to Sri Ramakrishna's teachings, it means two things. Accept only what is necessary, first. Second, even when you accept, you will have to give back in some form. Not exactly in the same form, but in some form. Even for monks, it is obligatory. Devotees bring so many things. It is not free gift. Even though we accept it, we have to give. What form? Do more japa. You pray for them and talk to them sweetly. When they are in distress, give them consolation. Help them in some way in return, but all the while with this awareness, it is not the person who is giving, it is God Himself who is giving. Bhiksham Bhagavati, Bhiksham Dehi. So even for householders, for devotees, they accept God has sent this gift, and if you need it, accept it. But give in return whatever you could give, either in the form of material things or in the form of prayers or good wishes, etc. Otherwise, we become debtors. And if we become debtors, then we will have to pay it back with compound interest. There is a beautiful story in Mahabharata illustrating this. There was a cobbler, poor cobbler family, and they didn't have children. Suddenly, the wife conceived and gave birth to a most lovely child. But after 2 days, the child died. And the parents were heartbroken. So there was a saint nearby. They went to him and they explained the situation. Why did this happen? We are praying to God and we thought God has sent us this child. Why did he live only for 2 days and then died? Then he explained, 2 years back, your husband, the cobbler, he made a new pair of shoes, kept them out in the sun for drying. And there was a sage who was walking that way. And it was so hot that he wanted a bit of relief. So temporarily he stepped into those shoes without their permission. And after a few minutes, he left and went away. Now he had to pay back. That's why he was born for 2 days. I don't know how you take that story, but the idea is, if we borrow something from somebody, then we will have to pay it in some form or other. We become debtors. As I explained in my previous classes, by birth, we are all indebted to the world in 5 ways. This is called Pancha Rina. And to get rid of that debt, whole life, we are getting rid of that debt. Pancha Mahayagna, indebtedness to the rishis who pass on their knowledge to us, sages. Indebtedness to gods because they give us all the things that make us happy in this world. Indebtedness to our ancestors. Their very genes are flowing through us. What we are physically, it is their contribution. Then we are indebted to so millions of human beings who are working unknown to us. Just to give an example, you go to Clark's and buy some new shoes. Where are those shoes made? Somewhere in Pakistan or China or Thailand or Hong Kong, some poor people under most distressing conditions, maybe small children, they are working hard and those things come to us. Here we don't know all this communication, but the law of karma works. So what can we do? We will have to return it in some other form. There is a way to do it, but we are indebted. Otherwise life is impossible here. Then we are not only indebted to human beings, we are indebted to the rivers, the mountains, the non-human beings, animals. Every day our bed tea doesn't come. Some poor cow is giving you the milk. You may be paying money, but how can we get rid of it? There is also a way that you be kind in your own way. Keep the environment pure and clean, etc. So by very existence, we are all indebted. Therefore, whole life is nothing but giving back what we are receiving. So the idea is, we have to be conscious that we are receiving, receive what is necessary, receive with the idea that it is God coming from God, and try to give back in your own way whatever you can give. That is the idea of aparigraha. Now, why these rules are made, and if we follow these rules, what would be the result? Extraordinary revelations will come through this book of Patanjali. We will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.